Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
So I just wanted to say a hello to everybody out there. I know there's a lot of people signed up and who'll be joining us and either listening later or listening right now, and I'm so excited. So thanks for calling in and spending an hour with us talking about transitioning back to school and getting ready to learn. I hope you guys can glean something from this talk that will help you and your children with the transition to school, which transitions can be difficult for all people, especially little people. And little people's worlds are small and simple, and entering school again after long breaks or even for the first time can unearth all kinds of feelings and unresolved old hurts. They can be difficult. Sometimes it doesn't even get difficult till a few days or a few weeks into the school year. But nonetheless, there can be feelings there. So we're going to talk about ways that we can help ease some of that using the listening tools. So I'm just going to go into a little introduction about myself really quickly. I'm not going to say too much. But I have two daughters who are 10 and 7. I'm married. I was a teacher for 8 years and high school counselor for 4. I taught Spanish and bilingual ed in the elementary setting. I have a master's in linguistics and BCLAB, which is bilingual cross-cultural language acquisition development. All of that training and all of that work led me to believe that I was going to be a natural parent, which I wasn't. And I had a lot of struggles when my kids began to fight incessantly and I didn't know exactly what to do. And I did use bribery and punishments and rewards. I used anything I could do to get my kids to behave the way I wanted to, and it never really worked. And so it brought me to Hand in Hand, and using the tools has changed my life with my kids, and has been amazing. So I want to share a little bit of that with you guys today.
Thanks, Michelle.
Great.
My name is Keiko Sato Perry, and I have two sons who are 13 and 10. They're going into 8th grade and 5th grade, and I'm divorced, and I'm a school teacher. By training, I taught kindergarten through high school, and I have master's in education, and I resonate with what Michelle said, because I was a teacher and I studied a lot about education. I thought I was prepared for becoming a parent. But when I had my first son, it was really challenging, and I couldn't admit to myself until I was pregnant with my second one. And I had to search high and low for discipline ideas and techniques, and through that effort I found Hand in Hand, and I finally learned to take care of my own emotions. That really changed a lot of things, and I it actually has 5 simple tools that will apply to a unique situation of our families, and with a unique solution that we can come up with our own thinking. So that was very appealing to me. And I also moved away from punishment reward. And in terms of school and learning, it was amazing to witness how just by listening to my kids, their hurdles and hurts can be removed, and I can be of help there. So they just basically become unstoppable learners, and I just learned that my attention is enough, my time that I'm spending here is enough, and the fact that I'm pleased with them is enough as a parent, even though I am work in progress and I make so many mistakes, but there are key things that I can remember in my daily life.
So nice, Keiko.
So I'm going to just talk about how we will make this call. First of all, this is back to school, ready to learn teleseminar, Michelle Carlson and Keiko Sato Perry leading. And if you're here for Parent Club Q&A, please get off the line and email martin@handinhand.org. So in this call, we're going to talk about parenting by connection tools to support our children so they can learn well in school. And we will cover topics like, what if your child doesn't like your teacher, or what if your child has a separation anxiety going into a new school? And we're going to talk about how we can make connection plans around school and learning. And we're going to talk about some resources you can pursue after this call, like the new book is coming that Patty Whistler and Tosha Shore wrote, and it's going to be published on the 23rd of August. And we're going to spend some time for Q&A at the end and open up the line. So this is called Parenting by Connection, and we propose that to support our children well, so they can learn well, we also need connection plan as we plan for school supplies and transportation and aftercare and, you know, lunch and dinner and all those things. We need to have connection in our daily schedule as a plan. So because connection is vital in their learning, we can support them emotionally and academically. If we support and connect to their tears, trembling, or tantrum, as well as we play with them laughing, somehow these things can really let us connect, and that will give them sense of connection, sense of how we love them, the sense of belonging, and that can remove some of the hurt so they can really unleash their learning. And Center for Disease and Control, if you search online, has an article called School Connectedness, Protective Factor. It says, research shows that students who feel a genuine sense of belonging at school, and I would say, and also at home, are more likely to do well in school, stay in school, and make healthy choices. Connected students believe they are cared about and how well they are learning. So I will give you a little example how I will, as a kindergarten teacher, I teach at independent school called Synapse School in Northern California. And I'm a co-teacher there. And last year, this is what I started doing. So at the beginning of the school day, they come in through the classroom, and I wait there, and I would say, hugs at the door, and they will come in, and they will have to give me a hug. Or they can run away from me, and then I can chase after them. But I make sure that I get down to their eye level, say hello, make an eye contact, and they get some kind of physical connection as well, so they can tell that we care about them. They're important at school, and so yeah, they can feel connected. All right.
Very nice, Keiko.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk a little bit about how we can get connected with our kids around the school day, because there's a large separation that kids have from their parents, and it's very disconnecting. It's very good, too. They spend a lot of time learning, and they get to meet people and socialize. But at the same time, they become disconnected from us, and that's kind of, there's no way around that. That just kind of happens. So I think I always could tell when I picked my kids up from school, they never quite right. They just seem a little bit off, a little edgy. They have, you know, they've tried to manage all these relationships all day long with their peers and with other adults. And so it's very difficult and it's a lot of work. So what I try to do is I really try to, get connected with them in the morning so that I can send them to school filled up. It's the same as like giving your kid a good breakfast. You want to get them nice and filled up with your attention and with your love and with your care so that when they go to school, they can be relaxed and calm and ready to learn. So I like to do a deliberate hello and a deliberate goodbye. And when I do a deliberate hello, it's early in the morning, and I do these kind of throughout the day, but early in the morning, I try to get with each of my daughters, and either I get in bed with them for like 3 or 4 minutes, and I look them in the eye, and I say good morning, and I just spend a minute there getting connected to them before I ask them to get up, before I ask them to brush their teeth, or to have breakfast, or to get dressed, or to do all those arduous things that we have to do to get ready. I really try to get just a few minutes with each of them to get connected, really look in their eyes, and really say good morning. I also do this when I pick them up from school. So when I pick them up from school or when I see them for the first time after school, I really try to have a deliberate hello again. And I really look into their eyes. I get down at their level, and I make sure that they know that I'm there and I'm present and I'm listening and I'm with them. So I try to do that when I see my kids after school and in the morning. And another thing I like to do is special time in the morning with each of my kids. My husband and I have been doing this for a few years, and we've had to get up 30 minutes earlier than we normally would like to get up, and it's not fun. And it's been very challenging to have to get to bed early and get up. You know, we get up at 6 o'clock. But we spend, after we eat breakfast, we spend 15 minutes with each of the kids, each of us, and then we switch. And so they get 15 full minutes with their mom and 15 full minutes with their dad. Not everybody can do that, but you can set it up where it's 5 minutes or it's 10 minutes or it's, you know, Monday is somebody's day and Wednesday is somebody else's day if you can only do it 2 days a week. But just getting some special time in the morning makes our life better because they're able to get through those morning chores better. They feel better. They're more endeared to me, and they're happier. They don't fight nearly as much. And it isn't always perfect, but it really does work. And special time is a different kind of play than normal play. Special time is the type of play that's completely child-driven, so that the child gets to say, I want to jump on the trampoline. I want to color. I want to whatever it is that they want to do. And we parents have to adhere to that. That's why it's special. It's not normal playtime. It's really kid-driven and kid-focused, and they get to be in control. And special time is one of the 5 tools that support, you know, the connected part of hand in hand. Other things about special time. Sometimes there's upsets after special time because the kids want more time. They don't want 5 minutes. They want 15 minutes. Or sometimes they feel so connected to us and they feel like we're listening and they feel like that we're so present that they're going to start to show us their big feelings. And so sometimes they'll want to have a meltdown or they want to have an upset. And it's because they know that we're present and that we're listening. And it can be very difficult, but very healing at the same time. So I'm a big proponent of special time in the morning.
Wonderful. So, well, special time can be used, when things get rough. So it would be really, really crucial to have timed special time that you can be one-on-one with your child. If you have, you know, more than 2, then you need to figure out. But it's really crucial to have that in the plan. And at the same time, special time can be used when things get a little bit sketchy, rough. And mm-hmm. when my older son was in first grade, he had daily homework. And I went on to work on this project later on. So my younger one didn't have homework in first grade, but he did. My older son did. And he usually spent about 15 minutes, which was a lot for him. He was already exhausted after spending 6 hours in school, and he held it up. You know, he usually holds it in, and then he comes home, and he really, all he wanted to do was just play and relax. But anyway, so he had about usually 15 minutes spending on homework. That day, I only have 20 minutes. And then I was thinking, uh-oh. And he wasn't happy about doing homework. It was a book report, and he wasn't yet reading. He was a pre-reader. For him to write anything was really a big deal. So I bit my tongue, and instead of just talking about how it would be helpful, and here's the pen and paper, I proposed special time. And I thought, because I have only 20 minutes, how about 3 minutes? So I said, what would you like to do? We can do whatever you want to do to play. And we were doing special time on a regular basis by then. So he said, I want to play the monster game. So that monster game is where I become a really feeble monster, try to catch him, but he is so swift and clever, and he is almighty, so he can run away from me really easily, and I just catch a curtain instead of him, or I fall down and I can't catch him, and I just say, oh my gosh, how can I catch him? How clever he is. But then he would laugh, and usually you need to have special time 101, so they would have a full attention, and I don't do any multitasking, I don't do anything else. But that day I had my youngest son, so he joined at the end, and then we were laughing and chasing after each other, and anyway, so the 3 minutes was up, and at the end he was fine at stopping that day, but then my younger son just called me for help, so I had to leave. So I left him with a homework, thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? But by the time I went back to him, he was already writing some sentences, and despite the time constraint, he was done. And I was really blown away how it was, how it worked.
Really great.
So,
thank you, Keiko. So I spoke about a deliberate hello, and I mentioned a deliberate goodbye, but I just want to take a little minute here to say also that there was a study that I read that said that men who kiss their wives goodbye live longer than those who don't, because they have a more positive outlook on life. I don't know where the study came from, but you can look it up. But I kind of, you know, in my mind think, well, if it works for men saying goodbye to their wives, or vice versa, probably wives saying goodbye to their husbands, then why wouldn't it work for parents saying goodbye to their children? So I like to have a deliberate goodbye at the end of the morning before I send my kids to school. And so I really get down on their level, and, you know, there's a lot of research about eye contact and how connective eye contact is, and I really try to use eye contact a lot, and I can see a big difference when I look and talk to my kids, when I look them deep in their eyes, as opposed to just saying something without looking or standing up. You know, I'm 5'8", and they're 3.5, 4 feet, and it just makes a big difference when you get down on their level and you look deep in their eyes and you say goodbye and you give a big hug and a big kiss, and you make it very deliberate, and you make sure you're listening. If they're saying something, you're really listening and you're responding in a way. You know, we tend to say, okay, yeah, good job, that's great. And
yeah,
I like to try to change my responses to be really meaningful and engaging and on point. And so I try to say less, but what I do say, I like to make sure that it's poignant and that they can tell by what I say that I'm listening to what they're talking about. And so I like to do a really deliberate goodbye in the morning with them, and really look at them in the eye and make sure they know that I love them before they go off to school.
Nice. So another connecting way I do still to this day is just showing I love you I drive my kids to school, and I just tap on the back mirror and make an eye contact through the mirror sometimes, just so they know that I am here thinking about them and be pleased with them. And also at the back, at red lights, I reach back to my kids, extend my hand, and then they usually hold my hand. And it's just a sweet way to stay connected going to school. And this is something I learned from another parent. She did special time. She couldn't find time to do special time at home before coming out. So she suggested doing special time, like walking to school. How do you want to walk to school? And I think they chose, like the child chose to skip or walk backwards, and then the mom followed, and she followed the child's lead, and they laughed, and it was a really nice way to connect and also do special time. And also I want to just add a little more about how we can increase safety, sense of safety. So we've been talking about how we can move towards kindness, playfulness, and closeness. And also we want to do, we want to just be sure that we don't do harm. I catch myself, nagging, rushing, yelling across the room, that kind of thing. So those can, erode the sense of safety and connection. So that's one thing. And also I would say developmentally appropriate scheduling, plenty of time to play and relax, and they can feel our attention. It's really hard to do everything in our very busy lives as parents. And we can prioritize and let go some of the expectations. For example, we're going to talk about how we use our tools at home, but it's okay sometimes to be late for school if the child is having a really huge cry. And, it may be really useful for you to stay there. On other days, maybe you don't have that time, and you might have to move to your, routine. Or sometimes it's okay not to have matched socks or have, veggie in your lunch every day. So there are things that you can prioritize. And also something that I learned in Hand in Hand is that we don't interrogate after school. So when we pick kids up, depends on the child's temperament, it may be okay, but in my kid's case, they won't say anything if I say, how was your school? It's too broad. And they are just, it's like they just came out of a bathroom, like after pooing or something. So we just treat it such. We first connect and listen, and we can be completely pleased with them, because we just reconnected after day of separation. And if we can do these connecting and loving kindness with them, then it's okay to take time out if it's really hard, to call somebody else or maybe listen in partnership. Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Keiko.
Show yourself. Your turn.
Okay, I'm going to talk about a little anecdote. I'm going to talk about my daughter that was really a big learning curve. I think more for me than it really was for her, but I learned a lot. My daughter was entering third grade, and she's a student. She loves school a lot and has always had a great time there, not without some difficulties, but overall she likes school. And she came home from the first day and she said, my teacher hates me. And I wanted to say, oh, of course she doesn't. Your teacher doesn't hate you. How could your teacher hate you? And I'm sitting on my hands and I'm thinking, I have to listen. I just have to stay listen. stay listening is just a time in which you just listen and you empathize and you validate feelings. And so what I tried is to say to her, oh, you think your teacher hates you. I'm sorry. That must not feel good to think your teacher hates you. Because she's awful. She uses, you know, a point system, and I didn't get as many points as so-and-so in the classroom, and I don't understand, and she must not like me. And she would go on and on and on and on, and I really tried to stay with her and tried to listen, and I didn't try to make it better, and I didn't try to tell her, well, you know, which is what I wanted to say, because it seems like that's what our society does, is we say things like, well, you know, it's okay. You get a bad teacher here and there, but you'll be okay. Oh, she doesn't hate you. She's probably just having a bad day. Or oh, the points aren't that bad. It's okay. You'll get more points tomorrow. Or even to the other extreme, like, well, I'm going to talk to the teacher and I'm going to see who got points and why they didn't get points and who's getting what and who isn't getting what. And instead of doing all those, that intervening, I just really tried to stay listen with her. And this went on for a few weeks, I think 2 weeks at least. And every day she came home in tears, and every day she was angry. And so every day she would come home and be angry. Not only was she upset with her teacher, but she was just lashing out. So she was mad at her sister, and she was mad at me, and she had all these off-track behaviors. It was really, really challenging. And so I had to get a lot of listening time because I needed somewhere to put my angst. And so in Hand in Hand Parenting, we have listening partnerships where you have someone who is also practicing hand in hand, and you have a designated time during the week where you can download and you get someone just to stay listen to you and, you know, not try to fix your problems, but try to give you a space to hold your feelings. And so I had to have a lot of that because I didn't know what to do. I thought this year is going to be awful. It's going to be terrible. I don't know how we're going to get through it. But after I listened to her for day after day and complaint after complaint and really empathized with her feelings, just really said, like, this must be really hard for you, and I'm here for you, and I understand how you're feeling. I can tell that you're having a hard time, and this is very difficult. And just to be really genuine about that care and about that empathy, and to really listen through it. After 2.5 weeks, I think it was, she came to me and she said, Mom, you know what? I'm just going to take my teacher for who she is. I'm going to take the good stuff, and I'm going to leave all the bad stuff behind. And I was, like, doing a dance in my living room, like, oh, my gosh, she got the whole lesson all by herself, and I didn't have to teach her the lesson. Like, I didn't have to tell her that. I didn't have to tell her why she should feel this way or why she should feel that way or whatever. But she taught herself her own lesson just by having a good listener. And it's just a good testament to stay listening and listening partnerships and listening in general, is that your own mind can figure out your own problem if it's given the proper space. And she was given the proper space to figure out her own problem, and it built in her lots of resiliency so that she knew she could come up against a really hard time, and she herself could find the, you know, the wherewithal inside to get through that. And so now next time when she has a hard time, and whether it be with a teacher or with a friend or whatever, she knows that she has the answers inside of her and that she didn't have to come to me for the answers. And the other thing I would say about that too is that if you do give your kids the answers, if you say, oh, you have a problem with so-and-so, a friend or whatever, well, you should say this to them, or you should say that to them, or you should do this, or you should do that, then we haven't given them an opportunity to trust themselves, that they have their own right answers. And then they're going to be coming to us to fix their problems and never find that, you know, self-fortitude to fix their own problems. And let me tell you, as a parent, it's excruciating to watch your child go through this, because all you want to do is teach them all the things that a 40-year-old person knows. But those aren't applicable, you know, to a 9-year-old kid or an 8-year-old child. They just aren't. And the bigger lesson is to teach them to be self-reliant. And I think that's what this stay listening experience did for my daughter, is to become just a little bit more self-reliant, you know, just a little bit more assured of herself that she could figure out her own problems.
Wow. That is amazing. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I'm going to share one anecdote, too, about how I use day listening. And this time, my youngest son was going into kindergarten. And he has had he had a history of separation anxiety in the past. And he wasn't really sure about starting kindergarten. And about this separation anxiety, there's going to be teleseminar coming up on September 11th. And there's online self-guided class as well through Hand in Hand. So if you're interested, you can look at those resources. But I'm going to just talk about how I used it and how it ended. So the first 4 days of kindergarten, my son was fine. He was reluctant, but he went and he came back. And I think it was on the fifth day. It was half day. So he went and then came back around lunchtime. And, but on the fifth day, he didn't want to go into the classroom. I wasn't there. His dad brought him in and he really had a hard time going into the classroom. So he had a bunch of crying and I think luckily there was a 3-day weekend. So, well, now we know we can anticipate that he's going to have a hard time next week because, you know, that's what he dealt with in the past. And we really wanted to support. So I think at that point we talked with the school counselor and the teachers there and the teaching assistant about the possibility of us coming a little bit earlier to school so we can start the day saying goodbye earlier. So and then also if he was really scared of going to school, so he might lash out. If that kind of thing happens, then we had an arrangement that he can go to the school counselor's office and I can stay listen to him. So we used the weekend before the second week to do a whole lot more of special time and physical play because we knew that there was fear and a lot of rough and tumble play and sweating and laughing will really, you know, let him move forward. So we did a lot of play, a lot of connection time over the weekend. And at the same time, I watched out for little goodbyes. Like I would move from one room to the other and leave my son somewhere. Even in the house, I would move it very slowly, and I would say, you know, I'm going to be in the other room, and I will be back, and I'm sure you're going to be fine here. Reassure him and also made it really deliberate. And I think it was the Monday morning or Tuesday morning. The second week started with a chunk of special time. I think we were doing 5 or 10 minutes. And the first sign of reluctance came as a way of him saying, I don't want to put on socks. I think it was, maybe it was a shirt or something. And then it was a first small resistance. And then I said, you know, it's time for you to go to school. And as soon as he heard the word school, he just started to run away from me. So I gently caught him and, you know, I'm sure you're going to have, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of story to tell me later. I want to hear all about it. And I said something like, you know, your teachers really like you. I can tell. And you're going to make friends. I'm sure you're going to make friends. I want to hear all about it. And those are the things that I said. And I think at some point he started crying. And when he slowed down, I would say, are you ready to go to school? And he would start crying a little more. And that day, I had to take my older son to school, but luckily his dad was there, so, you know, he didn't have to be late for school, but I just decided I should just stay with my youngest son and listen to him. And I was full of doubt, like, you know, I look like I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting there next to him, I'm holding him, I'm listening to his cry, I'm not doing anything other than saying, you know, I'm sure you're going to be fine, I want to hear all about it, your teachers like you, you're going to make friends, you know, just a little bit at a time. But he cried and cried, and it felt like a long time. And by the time he was done, he started looking around him, and he said he was not resisting at all to changing clothes or going into the car, and he was ready to go. So that was, and I witnessed that he just went through all the crying, and it took us about 30 minutes. So we were 30 minutes late, and I wasn't late for my work, so it was really worth the investment. And and he didn't have any problem afterwards, so that was the amazing thing. So that's my story.
Yay, good for you. A couple other things that I wanted to talk about, where I touched on the idea of kids coming home with off-track behaviors, and I think, you know, some of our kids will come home with off-track behaviors, meaning that they come home in a foul mood, you know, and who knows what happened at school. It could be a fight with a friend. It could be, you know, that they had a bad interaction with an adult. It could be that they didn't do as well as they wanted on a certain thing, or they didn't get picked when they thought they were going to. All kinds of little things happen to our kids all day long that we aren't privy to. And at the time, they might not think it's a big deal, but then they store it inside their body. And then when they get to a safe place, they start to let some of that stuff out. And that safe place is us, and that safe place is home. And so I know for me that when my kids have a bad day, I know immediately that they're having a bad day because they come with off-track behavior. They're rude. They're nasty to their sibling. They are disrespectful. And immediately I say to myself, okay, I have a choice here. I can correct all this bad behavior, which is what I would have done in the past. Correct. You're not to speak to me that way. I don't like the way you're talking. You know, we don't say those kinds of things. You know, all these kinds of corrections. Or I can try to connect. And I know for a fact, when I try to connect with my kids when they're having a really hard time and being rude, that they soften and that they come around and that they are appreciative of me trying to connect with them. Because I have really sweet, kind kids, and all kids are really sweet and kind and loving. Nobody wants to be rude. Nobody wants to be off track. No kid wants to feel like that. But they must feel really bad inside if they're acting that way. And so before I correct, I like to connect with them. So because my kids are a little bit older, I like to say to them, I know you wouldn't be acting like that unless something's wrong. And sometimes they'll say, oh, so-and-so, but they want to be my friend today. And then it's, you know, it's all out. Or they'll be like, I'm fine. I don't know what you're talking about. And I'll say, well, I'm going to come over there, and I'm going to kiss you until you put a smile on your face. And I'll get around to them, and I'll try to kiss them, and I'll try to, you know, be playful to get them out of that mood and get them more connected to me. And sometimes it will go away. Sometimes it will come back later in the day. Sometimes they'll tell me before bed what happened. Sometimes I'll never know what happened. But the idea is that those off-track behaviors are just a signal to us that something's wrong inside. And so we try to connect. We connect with play. We connect with stay listening. We connect with special time. If you can, sometimes I'll just say, okay, it's right now. You want 10 minutes of special time, let's go. So however I can get them, you know, cajole them out of that disconnection, I try to do that. And then I can stay listen. If it's some sort of big upset, then I can listen to all of their upset. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'm going to continue to talk here a little bit. I'm kind of sick of listening to myself talk, but I'm going to continue to do it. You're doing fine.
Did you talk about the experience as a classroom teacher or with the classroom teachers?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about my experiences working with teachers this past year. So I had a teacher, one of my daughter's teachers was pregnant, and she knew that I was a parenting coach, and she had kind of, I'd given her the booklets, and she'd read, and she was really into it, and she said, oh my gosh, I really want to take your starter class. I really want to take the class. And I said, okay, well, I'll do the class for you. Do you want to get some other teachers from the school to take the class? And selfishly, I was thinking, oh my gosh, this could be like a really good opportunity to make some serious change on our campus. We have a public school, Wonderland Elementary in Los Angeles. It's a lovely school. But, you know, our teachers have been trained in the very traditional way of behaviorism where they use, a lot of praise and they use a lot of punishment to kind of get the kids to do what they want to do. And I don't really believe in that, and I think kids don't really need it, and I thought this would be a great platform for me to be able to just give these teachers just a different perspective. So I had three teachers. I had a second grade teacher, first grade teacher, fifth grade teacher, a 4-5 split actually, and the assistant principal who came. And they came for 5 weeks. And after the first week, the first grade teacher who was my daughter's teacher said, I have to get rid of my clip chart. I can't use my clip chart anymore. I just can't use my clip chart. I have to get connected to the kids, and then they're going to be able to behave well in the classroom. And it was amazing to see her just see that whole, like, brain science and limbic system and connection all come together for her, you know, that if she could get them connected, that they then would be endeared enough to her, that they would want to please her. And then the 4-5 teacher followed suit, and the second grade teacher, it took her a little bit longer, but she did too. And so they all have been reworking their behavior management systems in their classroom to get rid of clip charts and point systems and, all of those, the timeouts and all of that kind of stuff. They've been working really hard to get those out of their classrooms. And so it was really rewarding. And I just want to say that I know we will encounter teachers, all of us on this call or people out there, we will encounter teachers who undoubtedly will use clip charts and, you know, what they call positive classroom management, and which is actually negative, and timeouts and all of these things. And I think these teachers do it because they don't have the tools to do, you know, something different or something maybe that could be better. And they don't have the time and they don't have the resources to explore this kind of work. And that, you know, when they took their classroom management training when they were in school, that's what they taught them. They taught them behaviorism. You know, they said if you take something away, then the kid's going to work really hard so that they don't get it taken away. Well, they actually do, but what's the repercussion? What's the inner repercussion? And how does the kid feel about you afterwards? And are they chasing the points as opposed to are they choosing to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, because they're learning to be good people? Or once you take the points away, they all act crazy. So I just wanted to put that in there, that we're all a work in progress, and teachers love their students and they want to be teachers, and all of them are good, wonderful people in it for the right reasons, and that, you know, this information would be so great for them. And so I try to impart it as much as I can in the most non-threatening way, because we also don't want to tell teachers how to teach. So it was a good opportunity for me. I was pretty excited.
Mm. That is amazing, Michelle. Wow. Do we have time to share one anecdote, or should we move on?
Yeah, or maybe you want to do quickly, or do you not want to? Either up to you.
Okay. Well, as a teacher, it's really a matter of having, if it's like one teacher in a classroom, it may be hard to do special time. But because I'm really fortunate to be the second teacher in the classroom, I was able to pull out one kindergartner who was really pouty, didn't want to start the day, didn't want to do anything at the beginning of the day. And I said, you know, I have 1 minute for you. It was just 1 minute. But I gave him a little back scratch, and he really enjoyed it.
And it changed the mood of, I don't know, he just, it just worked that day. His face brightened and he went back into the classroom and he was fine for at least maybe a couple hours. So
amazing.
That's something maybe you can do. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Great. So we'll take some questions if people have questions. Yeah, Keiko?
Yeah.
Should we take questions?
Seven,
so if you want to,
sure.
Go ahead, Keiko.
Yeah, star 7, if you have a question, to raise your hand. Let me check the screen.
Or a comment or anything, really.
Right.
Nobody?
Okay.
Nobody? That's okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, well then I'm going to do my one last little anecdote that I did in the classroom, and then we'll give you some more resources that you can find on HIH.
Wonderful.
We had a difficult student at our school, and I was committed to making it better for him because I wanted him to have a connection at school, so I did an experiment, and I did 30 minutes of special time for 30 days. With him, and it made a huge difference with him. And it would have been a better result had it been the teacher that was with him all day. But the connectedness that he and I felt, and the way that he interacted better with kids, and the way he interacted better with me was good. It was really good. I do think it could have been better had it been an actual staff person at school. But it just went to show you that he felt this connection to me, and that it helped him feel like he had a place on the campus because he was a very disconnected child. That's just a testament to special time in the school setting. So should we do some resource stuff, Keiko?
Resources?
What's coming up?
Great. So, first of all, thank you so much for being here, listening to this teleseminar. And Hand in Hand, the founder of Hand in Hand, Patty Whiffler, and one of the instructors, Tosha Shore, wonderful instructor, they wrote a book called Listen, 5 Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges. And the book will be released on 23rd. So if you are local in Bay Area, you can come to Kepler's bookstore. There's an event to celebrate and hear Patty talk, and she would sign books. Go ahead.
Yeah, and if you would like a copy from the pre-release stash, you can go to listenthebook.com and you can order one there. And those are the pre-release books.
Great.
And there's also a starter class, September 22nd.
Yeah.
Six mornings in Palo Alto from 10 to 12 on Thursdays, starting on the 22nd by Teresa Zepeda.
Yeah.
And what other things? That's it?
I think there are some online classes, starter class, and if you registered for this teleseminar, you're going to receive an email with a link to recordings, and you're going to receive more information about class offerings. So watch out.
Great.
All right.
Any other questions or comments or anything out there?
Nobody?
Star 7?
Nobody?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for coming. We so appreciate you spending your evening with us, and have a lovely, lovely time in your back-to-school endeavor.
Yes. And from me, too, thank you so much for joining on your evening, out of evening. And I hope you will try some of the tools. And if there are any things that you can share with us, please feel free to do so. There are Facebook groups and Yahoo discussion groups and all of those. And Michelle, would you like to share your email address?
Sure. I'm Michelle at peaceandparentingla.com, and you can also find me at peaceandparentingla.com.
Great. And mine is Keiko, K-E-I-K-O, at handinhandparenting.org. All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Michelle.
Good night, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.